Saint Pilgrim that we will have to have, particularly in minority communities, to be able to just survive, let alone move ahead into living and into life. Perhaps one of the most frustrating things that I've found in my particular campaign was that of some of my Black brothers telling me that in my political activities, that some way or the other, that I was castrating them. That comes as a rather bitter pill to swallow. Mrs. Chisholm had somewhat the same problem on a much larger scale. And it brings me to another point that I want to make. It is that Black men and Black women cannot afford the luxury, cannot afford the luxury of bickering amongst ourselves, holding ourselves back, trying to decide who's going to walk forward and who's going to walk two or three steps backward. Because we are a people, regardless of whether we live in nice homes or whether we live in ghettos, whether we're sleeping on the street, or whether we're sleeping on our expensive beds in our expensive homes, that each of us, because of the color of our skin, are in the same bag and we are in the same barrel. And wherever we find the intelligence, wherever we find the drive, wherever we find the know-how, whether it be male or female, that we as a group of people had better jump in and grab whatever opportunities we have before us, take advantage of them, and open doors in the best way we possibly can once we get there to help our other brothers and sisters get in. We are a group of people where we cannot afford the luxury of not pulling together. We cannot afford the luxury of dropping out of school. We cannot afford the luxury of not being able to pull and to work together. And I'm not at all sure whether that is a problem of Black men and women of the South, of the West, of the North, of the East, or just one or two particular areas of this country. I know as I have traveled around in the West and the East, that is a problem. Which one will lead first? And I am simply saying to you that we can't afford it, that we have to be able to walk together. And we also have to be able to realize that if one can make one or two steps faster than the other, that it's going to take all of us back there who can't keep up to build up that strong, solid wall of support. And when that person ahead gets weary to help prop them up and keep them going. Because our nation is sorely in need of leadership today. But black people are even more in need of leadership. Because with each strong leader that we have had, whether male or female, in recent years there have been ways in which they have been eliminated, ways in which they have been silenced. And we have found ourselves pulling back and looking around for guidance and direction and for strong leadership. And perhaps that's why I had so much pride in walking across this campus today. Pride in helping to keep a small black college in Mississippi open. And being aware that black institutions in our country today must survive. They must continue to exist. Because it's here with on this campus and other campuses like this that we work, that we cultivate, that we develop the strong, knowledgeable leadership that not only our country needs, but that our people need. And those who have the opportunity to come through these walls of learning, don't forget that once you get out, that you have an obligation not only to yourselves and your families, but to your people and to your nation as a whole. Because we are talking about survival today. And it's not just a problem of women. It's not just a problem of youth. It's not a problem of the aged. It's not just a problem of the poor. But it's a human problem, and one that can only be solved by human beings. When my husband used to work the long hours that he did, when the abuses were upon him, many other people who took a stand for right, people throughout the South, black people, of sharing in those abuses, the pain, the sorrow, the frustration myself. I used to question him when he would say to me and to others that the South would be the best place to live once most of the problems of prejudice and racism were eliminated. Yes, I question his sanity when he would make that statement. Because at that particular time, I found it difficult to believe. But as time moves on, and as I see changes taking place, as I see attitudes change, and as I have had a chance to sample what it's like to know the problems that you are up against and what you have to do, as well as to know that those problems are out there, but they are so neatly covered and camouflaged that you can't exactly put your hand on them, that I'm inclined to agree with him. That perhaps it will be the South that will show the way for the rest of the nation to follow. And I think it's in the strength, the concern, and the commitment of black men and black women, of those who are not black, who are also concerned and committed, of working and pulling together for a better area and for a better country. There are many people who still ask, well, what can I do? What role can I play? Where can I go to be of help? My answer is, all you have to do is to look around you, be honest, and you can find something that you can get involved in and involved deeply in helping us move ahead. Because the opportunity is standing here, waiting for us to simply come and seek it out. And that reminds me of a story that I used to hear my grandmother tell some time ago. She mentioned it to me when she was trying to give me a kind of encouragement to keep going ahead. She would tell the story of this little boy who would often visit the local store, Country General Store. And each time he would go there, he would walk over to this barrel of molasses. And he'd take his finger and stick it in, and then take his finger that was covered with molasses to his mouth, and lick the molasses off the finger. And as she told it, one day this little boy put his finger in the barrel and could not touch the molasses. So he decided to tiptoe to reach it. And in so tiptoeing, he lost his balance and fell in head first. And when he was helped out of the barrel of molasses, his head was covered and the molasses was oozing all over his face. And as she told it, this little boy lifted his eyes heavenward, stuck his tongue out, ran it around his mouth, and the molasses continued to come down over his face. And he said, Lord, please make my tongue equal to my opportunity. With all that we have before us in this community and communities throughout this nation, that's what we should be asking and that's what we should be doing. Because the things that we need to tackle to make this a better country, a better place to live in, not just for our children, but for ourselves here and today, that opportunity is here. All we have to do is to go out and meet that opportunity. Be aware of it. Be committed and realize that the problems that exist out there are of our own making. They are of our own making because perhaps someone else did determine the way in which we are going. But they are of our own making because so many of us have pulled back. We're sitting down. We refuse to admit that they exist. And we're doing absolutely nothing about it. So we are a part of that problem. We are the problem. Until each and every one of us decide that we have an obligation to ourselves and to our people to organize, to educate, to work for financial strength, and whatever else is needed in helping to lift ourselves up and beyond what is happening in our society today. And it no longer matters about the color of one's skin. All we have to do, many of us in many instances, is to pick up our telephone, try calling someone, and hear all the little noises and the little clicks. All you have to do is to know someone whose telephone is already tapped. And if you make too many phone calls there, you can be assured that yours soon will be tapped too. All you have to do is to get a ticket for overparking or for speeding, and you'll find out that you, white or black, are just a number like somebody else, and all they have to do is just to get that little number and give a complete rundown of your entire life and your associations and everything else. All you have to do too is to read, to make note of what's happening to our news media today. And we will find out pretty soon that we have little or no control over any part of our lives. Why? Because we are sitting back, because we are not alert, and because those of us who are doing very little to make it known that we don't like the direction in which this country is going. And then perhaps I can ask the question, do we like the direction in which it's going? Perhaps we have become so lazy that all we want to do is to sit back and let someone run our entire lives for us. Tell us when to get up, where to go to work. Give us just enough out of our salary checks to exist from one month to the next, and sometimes not even that. Look, if you will, with what has been put before the American people the past couple of weeks, as we all held our hopes high that the war was going to end and that the funds that were being put into that war were going to be used to help upgrade the standard of living for people in this country. And what were we told? Forget it. Yes, the military budget is going up, but the programs here at home for human development are going down. The programs, the ideas, the ideals that people worked, died, were beaten for over the past 10 years have almost been wiped away in entirety. All of those things that deal with health, education, job training, things that are going to help each and every one of us move up, have just about been given the axe. And where are the voices that are being raised in protest to that? Do we sit back and accept it? Do we wait for another 4 years and say, well, I'll cast my ballot then, maybe it'll be different? If we do, then truly we deserve whatever kind of life we have here in America. But if we realize that only through organizing, through educating, and yes, beginning with the very, very young, of educating them, of making them aware of their responsibilities, are we as a people, we as a nation, really be able to say that we are moving ahead? For I, for one, am sick and tired of hearing about America being first in strength, America being first in wealth, America being first in this and that. I am working, and I am hoping, and I am praying for the day where we can say America is first. First in dealing with its human resources, first in making sure that all of its citizens are able to enjoy the rights that it should be, of saying that America has set an example of life, livelihood, respectability for the rest of this world and other nations to follow. Because we are finding fast that we can no longer count on buying friendship. Because the countries take the money, and as they take it, they sneer and they make snide remarks and they laugh as they accept it. When are we going to be first where those nations will want to follow a true democracy, because we have worked to see that it has happened at home first? Again, I say, that depends on us, men and women alike, black, brown, white, what have you, alike. but most of all, to my black brothers and sisters, whether we not live, whether we not survive, but whether we are able to even exist in this country depends on our coming together, depends on our being constantly aware that we've got to find the means and the ways of uniting and staying that way for our benefit, for our strength, for our power. Thank you very much.